I mean, I always say I think it's what you make it. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, I have some friends who consider themselves entrepreneurs who work 2 times a week and they're broke, you know, and they're like, oh, I do what I love and stuff like that, which that's fine. That could be a term, I guess, some people. But to me, it's somebody who takes a risk, not knowing what the outcome is, believes in something, you know, and goes out there. And it's not about proving anybody wrong. It's just doing something that you personally feel deep down inside you could turn into a potential business and make a living out of it.
This episode is sponsored by Link. Are you someone who passes out a ton of business cards expecting a follow-up? With traditional business cards, as many of you know, they get lost. We are changing the way that we connect with new people. This easy-to-use product is great for anyone. Link offers a line of products that let you share information instantly with the people you meet. You can build a page that contains your contact information, website, social media links, photos, videos, appointment scheduling, custom forms, and more. All shareable with just one tap of this smart device. It's an unlimited use business card that you can change over time. The possibilities are endless. As an added bonus, if you purchase using promo code EmpoweringBusinessDFW, you will receive 15% off your entire order. Check the link in the show notes for more details.
Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of the Empower Business DFW podcast. I am your host, Stephen Austin, and today I've got a guy with me that, you know, I've heard so much about him through other podcasts and throughout the community, and I'm excited to have him come on this show and share his story and his journey throughout entrepreneurship. So he is the founder of Gazova. So Goran, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Stephen.
And I'm glad you're here. And like I said, I've heard your story so many times and it's truly inspiring. And I'm really excited for the listeners to hear where you went from, you know, growing up as a kid and where you came from and that whole foundation that was built and then getting into your business that you have today. So just take a second, introduce yourself.
Yeah, my name is Goran Krindia and I'm the founder and CEO of Gazova.
Perfect. Well, going back, you know, what was your... walk us through, what were you like as a kid? Tell us your whole journey as a child.
Sure. Yeah, so I'm originally from Bosnia, which is in Europe. I grew up just like any other kid. I enjoyed sports quite a bit. I think my country is a very beautiful country, but unfortunately, we suffered the war that started, I believe, in 92. So I was literally age 5 going on to 6. So I just remember a lot about my youth, just being a happy kid running around with a soccer ball. That's what I remember from 0 to 5, so to say.
Yeah, but your whole journey, you know, from growing up in Bosnia and then, you know, through the war and getting to the U.S., do you want to share that story with us at all? Gladly.
Yeah, so as I mentioned, unfortunately, we did have a war. It was during that time that around 2 o'clock, couple of soldiers came knocking at our door, came to get my dad to go fight. Obviously, it was a little bit scary for us. My dad, you know, we've heard some noises about there potentially being a war and stuff, but we didn't really think much of it just because there's been quite a bit of that going on. But my dad just said, hey, just to be safe, you know, told my mom to take all her stuff, take me, my twin brother, and my sister on the next bus to Germany. And that's exactly what we did. Next day around 8 o'clock at night was the bus that we got on and headed to Germany. Unfortunately, once we got to the border of Austria and Germany, they checked for passports and we did not have a German passport. So they kicked us out and it was like 2 in the morning and we found a nearby church, luckily, and we stayed a night in front of the church just to be discovered the next day by a couple of nuns that let us in inside the church. They provided a shelter for like a 2-3 days, something very small, fed us and stuff. And luckily for us, my mom had a brother in Germany. We were able to call him. He was able to pick us up illegally, unfortunately, and take us to North Germany. Once we got to Germany, the first thing we tried doing was starting to call my dad, just kind of seeing, you know, how he's doing and stuff. And keep in mind, we don't have the technology we have today. Cell phones might have existed. I remember not seeing one. And if they did, it wasn't, we couldn't afford one, I guess, what I'm trying to say.
All right.
I remember my mom going to pay phones and stuff and calling back home and stuff and just not hearing about my dad. All the family members that we had, they're just like, hey, we haven't seen him. We don't know where he's at. This continued for about a good 10 months or so. And my mom kept going every day trying to call him. And every time me and my twin brother and my sister would ask, hey, you know, when are we going to see dad? My mom would always say positive, you know, oh, daddy's just, you know, helping the country out and stuff. But I think closer to a year, it got to her. And I don't think she could continue lying, so to say, or, you know, so she just wanted to be honest. At this time, we lost some family members and the war's gotten pretty bad. And my mom just said, you know, maybe you're not going to see your dad again, you know, and, you know, she braced my sister for it to help her with us too. And that was kind of hard. I always say it in every podcast, in every story, I was like 5, maybe 6 at the time, but I felt like I was 30. It really hit me hard just because I had kids around me that had two parents that saw their dad every day. And I never got to say goodbye to my dad. I never got to think of what the next chapter might hold. It was just a weird ending if that was the end. And it was during those hard times, you know, we lived in a fish warehouse, to be honest with you, in Germany. A lot of the employees didn't want to stay there because it was loud. It operated 24 hours. So they had their own apartment. So we took shelter where they didn't want to stay. And my sister tried to keep us kind of grounded and happy by watching American shows, which everybody in Europe sort of say idolizes the U.S. And we watched Beverly Hills 90210, Full House, some of those shows. And one thing that they all had in common was a happy family, a father figure in a nice neighborhood. And we had the complete opposite. So my sister said, if one day we could make it to the States and start our own business or just be successful, what would we call it? And we threw out all kinds of names. And my sister is the one that said, what about Guzova? And it's the first two letters of my name, my twin brother, and my sister. And she said, no matter how hard life gets, no matter, you know, what challenges we're facing, just remember where we are at now and continue through it. And I'm not going to lie, man, when I started this company, there was 3 or 4 times when I seriously thought to myself, you know, I just can't do it. You know, it's just not working out for whatever reason. But I kept reminding myself, you know what, like, I've been through worse, you know, like, just keep going. And it definitely has helped a lot. So there is a positive, I guess, to the story. After about a year and 2-3 months, my dad finally, you know, made it. Unfortunately, we lost our house that we had back home due to the bombings. And Germany said once the war stops, we'd have to move back. Well, we had nowhere to go. So they said we can apply to US, Canada, and Australia. We applied to all three just to get out. And luckily for us, we were able to come to the USA.
Yeah, that's it's an amazing story. And so when you made that transition from Germany to the US, where did you go? What was that like? What was that transition like for that first year?
Yeah, so as I mentioned, we watched a lot of those Beverly Hills 90210, Full House and stuff, and we got picked up by Catholic Charity, and we ended up going to one of the worst neighborhoods in Fort Worth. Second day or first day we got there, we got robbed. So it was just a completely different picture that I personally painted, I think my family as well, just based on what we thought the U.S. would look like. So they helped us in the beginning. I think for the first 3 months, they helped us with shelter, food and stuff like that. But then after that, it was just kind of, you know, hey, figure it out on your own. And it could have been 6 months or no, but I know it wasn't like a very long time.
Yeah, I think sometimes when you think you're going somewhere and it turns up to be completely different, and then your mindset starts to go like, where is the happy families that I used to watch on TV? Like, where is all this coming from? So what was that turning point when you realize, like, okay, all right, I can see where living in the United States has somewhat of that reality.
Yeah, it happened actually pretty fast. Like I said, I mean, yes, we landed in a rough neighborhood. My parents were super protective and stuff. Luckily for us, you know, Catholic Charity would pick us up and take us to grocery shopping and stuff. And we met this one guy that worked there, and he would show us kind of, you know, different parts of the city, like the downtown. And even in Germany, where I lived in a smaller city. So to go to downtown Fort Worth, and when they took us to Dallas, I mean, I've never seen a skyscraper that big. You know what I mean? Like buildings with 500 floors, what, 100 floors, you know? It was quite, you know, it hit me personally back then. I was like, wow, like, you know, there's a lot of opportunity here. You know, this is like money. They would take us to like the rich neighborhoods. And, you know, seeing those homes, it was just like, mind-boggling to me.
Yeah, I mean, you look at some of these neighborhoods and, you know, now that you're, you know, successful, you have a business, you're an entrepreneur, and you still look at some of these homes, and you're like, man, what do these people do for a living? You know,
right. I used to want to knock on people's doors and just be like, man, just tell me what you do. Like, you know, like maybe it's an industry I can get into and do something. But I mean, I'm sure it's hard work, you know, that got them there.
Yeah. I mean, I, you know, a lot of times, sometimes you get that image of you got the nice car, you got the house, and, you know, and we'll talk about this towards the end of it when we talk about what it's like to be an entrepreneur, but they don't see, they just see the image. They don't see everything that went into that company that they now work for or the education path that they took to get to that job where they are now. Right. So a lot of times, you know, they see the big house and the big car, but they forget about all the other stuff that goes along with it.
Yeah, man, I can't wait till we get to that question or that chapter, because I was one of those guys. You know, I saw the big cars, the homes and stuff, and I was like, man, this guy's lucky and whatnot. But now that I'm on my own journey, I'm like, man, like, it's so much work, so much stress, so many things that can go right and wrong, and so many things that you have to endure to get to that point. So I respect anybody in the big house, because I know what it takes to get there, or potentially could see what it took to get there.
Yeah, well, let's just stay on this topic, and then we're definitely going to get to your business. Sure. But, you know, the term entrepreneurship is so thrown out there, right? The shiny object syndromes, the flashy cars in the house, and the term entrepreneur can be, you know, you work a couple hours a week and, you know, make all this money, and next thing you know, you got those big things. So, you know, from your perspective, what is it truly like to be an entrepreneur?
I mean, I always say, I think it's what you make it. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, I have some friends who consider themselves entrepreneurs who work two times a week and they're broke, you know, and they're like, oh, I do what I love and stuff like that, which that's fine. That could be a term, I guess, some people. But to me, it's somebody who takes a risk, not knowing what the outcome is, believes in something, you know, and goes out there. And it's not about proving anybody wrong. It's just doing something that you personally feel deep down inside you could turn into a potential business and make a living out of it. I don't think any entrepreneur has to be, you know, profit. We don't ever look. I just think that the picture is painted like, oh, most success, like when you see those homes and stuff, and I'm not trying to throw shade to any industry and stuff, but it's very rare that you'll find a teacher living in a $5 million house, right? Most times, like, hey, this person owns a business, right? And I think that's what people kind of get attracted to. It's like mostly these guys who started their own businesses, real estate guys and stuff, entrepreneurs, right? And I think that's what draws them to that.
So you said a little bit ago that, you know, you were that person that saw those cars and kind of questioned some things. You know, where was that shift in mindset going from, you know, look at that to, hey, this could be something I could look at?
Country club. I used to be a valet at a country club at like 22, 23. I don't know. I was young while I was in college. And I saw quite a bit of guys in their 30s showing up in some really nice cars. I mean, cars are like $200,000. And, you know, I never asked them what they did for a living. It just wasn't right to ask. But I told myself, look, there's really nothing different between me and them. We both have two hands, two feet and stuff. Maybe they have more connections than I do. But I was like, if I work hard and, you know, really push myself, I can achieve it, you know? And ever since I personally painted that picture to myself that, hey, I can go out there and make it happen, it never stopped me. I never looked at it like I'm from a different country or, you know, I don't know the skill. If I need to learn anything, I could acquire it one way or the other. And I always focused on things that I personally was good at, and things that I wasn't, I would either outsource it or try to learn if it is something, a skill that I could acquire rather quickly. But one thing that really stood out to me was a quote a gentleman gave me at the country club. You know, he really liked me and liked, you know, how I guess I was challenging myself. And he told me, no matter what business you start, and he was super successful, he's like, just be a little different than the guy that you try and compete with. That sounds very, I don't know, odd, but honestly, it's the truth. When you look at like the Starbucks and a lot of these big companies that have done it, like, I mean, they sell coffee at the end of the day. I mean, QT sells coffee, so does McDonald's and stuff, but they really create this like nice experience where it's like cool to say, hey, I'm at Starbucks and stuff like that. They really make you think a certain way. And that really stuck out to me. And I'm like, look, I don't have to recreate the wheel of any business, but I'm like, if I can just do something different, you know, from what I would like to start and just make it more appealing, I could be successful at that. So that really stood out to me. And when I started Guzova, I always told myself, okay, what can I do that's different than what customers are currently being served or the companies are currently offering?
Yeah, like you said earlier, when you were 5, you felt like you were 30. So now when you're 22 working at the country club, maybe you felt like 45 or 50. And so your mindset's really focused on, you know, just because I don't know it, just because I don't come from the same background, doesn't mean I can't do it. So I love that idea. And I think that inspires a lot of people who may come here from another country or may see the opportunity. In reality, anyone can do it as long as they work hard and they keep their focus on what they want to keep their focus on.
Yeah, I mean, you're spot on.
Yeah. So when you started to build your business, most of the time when you think about entrepreneurs and businesses, they're usually created because they're trying to be the solution to a problem, right? So walk us through, what was your thought process starting Gazovo? I mean, where did you come up with the idea?
Yeah, so this is kind of like my third or fourth venture, I would say, but all the other past ones have been complete failures. Thinking of one that I started 10 years ago, I think could have been a huge hit today. It was the on-demand fitness. I was trying to lose weight, could not find a trainer due to their schedule or my schedule. And I was traveling quite a bit, so I constantly had to get with another trainer. So I was like, hey, how cool would it be if I could, you know, have a phone, you can coach me personally. And just because I tried P90X and they'll do 25 pushups and I would do five. And I'm like, man, screw you, I'm done. But I'm like, what if there was somebody who could like literally watch me and then, you know, force me to do these things. So I started that with a guy here locally about 10 years ago. And, you know, we got traction. I got, you know, fitnesses to sign up, their trainers and whatnot. But we early on stumbled just because my co-founder at the time, unfortunately, was addicted to some drugs, I guess. Mm. And I was just a workaholic and I was moving probably 10 times faster than he was. And after 6 months, I just gave up on it. So there's a couple of businesses like that I started that kind of failed. But the biggest thing is I learned a lot from it. And while I was at college at UTA, two of my friends that played tennis, they were moving out during move-in, move-out day. And I saw him carrying a couch down from like a second or third floor. And it just doesn't, me personally, doesn't look right. Two girls, and nothing against women or anything. It just didn't look like the right thing to do. You know, it seemed heavy. It seemed inconvenient and whatnot. Seeing them struggle didn't paint a best picture. So I went, you know, and talked to them. I was like, hey, you know, why didn't you guys go through a normal process and just use a moving company? They're like, well, we called the moving company and they said, hey, for a couch and, you know, mattress and two things, they would charge us $500 because of a minimum, you know, all the other stuff you can with a moving company. I said, okay, well, why don't you go rent a U-Haul? They were not of age and they're like, we don't really feel comfortable driving a truck. So I was like, okay. And then I was like, well, what about the, you know, Craigslist and all these other offer up stuff? And they said, we talked to a gentleman and he wanted to come at like 8 o'clock at night. And she's like, I have no photo of the guy. I have no idea who he is. It's just a little scary and we're two girls. So they actually found the guy they played tennis with who had a pickup truck. And he's like, hey, I'll do it for $50. I'll help y'all, you know, load it and unload it or whatever. So me kind of being an entrepreneurial bug, I was like, you know what? Like, what if we created an app where people who have these smaller items could get connected to people with pickup trucks that could make money? And that's kind of how it started. It started around UTA and TCU. We quickly gained traction among the students. And then one of the parents at TCU called me and said, hey, my daughter used your app, loved it. Is it something just for students? So can I use it? And I was like, you're more than welcome to use it. And we averaged like a download or two, man, a day. It was horrible. And then all of a sudden we saw like 200 something downloads. And I'm like, whoa, what just happened in one day? And this lady called me and said, hey, I was really impressed with your service. Love what you're doing. I'm a micro blogger / influencer in Fort Worth. I wrote an article about your company. And she was part of this group where it's a bunch of affluent women and stuff. And they have a need for buying stuff, donating, and getting stuff delivered. And literally, we just took off.
Well, I like that story too, because a lot of times people are very impatient when they look at starting something. And one thing you got to realize, whether you want to start something, a business or whatever, everyone starts at zero. Everyone starts at the very bottom. So the ability to recognize that and understand that in the beginning, and then you just hearing your story, yeah, we got one or two downloads a day, but it wasn't anything crazy. It wasn't getting me to that fancy car, that house that I wanted to live in. Right. And then, you know, fast forward, now you have 200 a day and it just blows up because not only are you doing a great job for the community, but everyone else is starting to catch on and word of mouth and organically it's growing. Says a lot about the work that you did from the beginning. So kudos to you for that.
One thing that really helped me out a lot is I cashed everything in. I got fired from my job. I said, look, I'm going to go all in. And the reason I got fired is because I worked in this company. I was getting a lot of phone calls and there's a lot of changes. If I could go back, I would definitely do. But I did, I would say like 90% of the deliveries in the beginning. Either I was a driver or I was a helper, because I really wanted to understand the customer's pain point, what they like, what they didn't like. And I learned so much. And I think once people got to know me personally and I was able to say, hey, I'm doing these deliveries. When you book it through the app, it's, you know, my company, this is the service you're going to get. It made them feel super, super comfortable. And it was hard because in Texas, you know, so to say, I guess I could say forward, it was hard to convince somebody that you can get anything, especially think about this was like 3 years ago. You know, now you have Favor and these Uber Eats and all this. But 3 years ago, kind of, we were like one of the first companies to actually deliver something like furniture, right, on demand through an app. people didn't want to trust us. They're like, hey, I'm on your app. I'm about to book it. And it's asking me for your credit card. And they're like, nah, I'm not going to do it because the name sounds weird. It might be a scam. So I just did say, look, I don't care if you pay me cash, check or whatever. You don't have to use the app. How about you use me today? Let me earn my trust. And then, you know, going forward, go through the app. And that's how I did maybe about 100 deliveries with different customers. And then once they saw I'm a real person, we did a good job, they felt comfortable putting their credit card in. And some of those customers are still with us today.
You know, sometimes when you do that too, though, that would be a spot where a lot of people would give up, right?
Yeah.
The whole business venture, because it's like, hey, you know, how am I supposed to maneuver through that if nobody wants to even sign up and download the app and use me? Like, how do I get through that? So your ability to maneuver through that is a good thing. And I think sometimes, unfortunately, that's where some companies fail, because they don't have that extra drive just to make those maneuvers.
Yeah. And when you don't have much money behind it, which now I look is it's a great thing, honestly, you become more creative. You know, I had one investor tell me, you know, money doesn't solve everything, you know. And at the beginning, when I was looking for funding, I was like, yeah, right, you don't know what it's like. But now I'm like, I see his point. You know, I had to be in these shoes to really understand, like, yes, money is great, don't get me wrong, but sometimes when you don't have much of it, you think a little different, you're more patient, you know, you test the waters and see what works and what doesn't. Compared to with money, you would throw a lot in one, and sometimes you get burned, and it's a pricey experience.
Yeah. Usually when you hear of startups, especially in the tech world, you hear of the term bootstrapping, and then you also hear, you know, funding, right? So it sounds like you kind of did a little bit of both, where you had all of your personal savings, you sold your car, sure, all of that to invest in the business, and then you had the ability to go out and start getting some funding. So walk us through that. What was that like?
So my bucket list was always to get funded. For whatever reason, I always felt like it's the next big cool thing to do, you know, and thank God I managed to check that box, you know. But yes, I bootstrapped everything. I had some money in savings, you know, and as the business was kind of, you know, taking off, and nothing crazy numbers. I mean, like, it was roughly $10,000 a month. I mean, I feel comfortable saying that. I mean, nothing crazy, you know, and keep in mind, that's not profit. That's just revenue, right? After you pay your drivers and stuff, literally, we were like negative. So I sold my car. I had a brand new paid off car I sold. The money that I got from that, I put towards 1 year's worth of rent for my house. And said, look, for 1 year, I'm going to do this. Whatever money I can make for my company, I'm going to do it. Another thing that I did was customers would be like, hey, can you move my deliver a couple of things for my storage? And then can you take my old couch and take it to the dump or trash it? And I would ask him, hey, would you mind if I keep it and do whatever? They're like, yep, as long as it's out of my house. So I would get their item. I would take it home, take a bunch of nice pictures, put it up on Facebook Marketplace. A person would buy it, and then I would offer delivery. So I would make money on the move and on selling the item.
That's awesome.
And believe it or not, that's kind of how I, you know, managed to, you know, make some. I had one picture where I literally had like 50 things in my garage. And that's kind of what kept the bills paid and kept me afloat and sometimes, you know, just kept me motivated. So I did whatever it took, you know, not to get funded. And my whole thing was always like, I didn't want to be the one guy that's like, hey, I have an idea and it's going to work and I need $1 million. I always thought about myself, like, if I'm going to invest in something, I want somebody to go out there and work hard and prove to me that there's customers and you can make it work. So once we, you know, figured out a good way how to get customers, had revenue and stuff, I was like, okay, this is the time to get some funding, hopefully. And it was the hardest thing I've ever done.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just no, you know, there's nothing sexy about it. Who cares about a moving business? You know, I don't care that you can pick stuff up in an hour. We're into a real estate, oil and gas, especially from, you know, Texas and stuff. And literally I got to the point where I said, look, we had some recurring revenue in our account. We had this one option from Stripe, which is our payment processing company, to get a loan of $25,000, I believe. And I told myself, I'm going to take $25,000 out and I'm going to see how many billboards I can put in where our markets and, like, literally in DFW, where I think we can get the most traction, come up with something cheesy, you know, whatever. And I was like, if that takes our business to the next level, great. If not, at least I had a billboard. That was the end of my company at that point. So I took the $25,000 out. However, I never got the billboards. And at that time, I got an introduction to one of this local guy named Tyler. And he came here to work for the Bass family and kind of handled their funding investing. And a friend of mine called me and said, hey, you should speak to him. He's all about, you know, trying to find money for local companies. And I was like, no, I really don't want to. I was like, I've just been burned by so many investors. I'm just tired of telling the same story. So he somehow convinced me to, you know, talk to this guy, get on the phone. So we set up a date, you know, and whatnot. And I remember we had a time for us to call, and I just got a haircut. And I think like he called me. I think, yeah, he called me and stuff. He's like, hey, this is Tyler. I was like, hey, Tyler, it's Goran. And he just literally dives right in. What are your business numbers? Tell me your revenue. Tell me what your projection. Like, not even saying, like, this is our first time talking. And I just kind of laughed, like, whoa, like, you know what I mean? Like, where did this come from? And, you know, at that time, I kind of like had something, not much experience, but I just had this negative, you know, thought of, you know, investors and stuff. So I was kind of like more like, it's whatever. So I don't know. And we set up a meeting. I met with him and he really liked what I was building. He loved the fact that, you know, we had some revenue behind us, had customers and stuff. And that was our first funding.
That's so cool. I love to hear those stories too, because again, it's all about the grit behind it. Yeah. The ability to keep pushing, because again, you could have easily said, no, I'm just going to take the 25,000, and if it works, great. If not, I'm just going to shut it down and see what happens. And thankful for Tyler, you know, he convinced you, twisted your arm to have one more meeting.
Yeah. I mean, that took a little while. Don't get me wrong. It took, I would say, like a good 3 months to close that deal and stuff. But throughout the whole time, he kept me hopeful. And that's why I didn't go with the billboards, because I'm like, hey, I just took 25. But, you know, if we can get 10x that through him, you know, and it'll give me more, and then I can get the billboards and everything else I wanted to do. And, you know, and he introduced me to our chief operating officer. You know, he said, if you guys can work together, you know, I would love to invest and stuff. And then he circled out some other investors, you know, Bobby Patton and the TCRG group, you know, who are still our investors today. And that's just kind of how it snowballed.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, they're probably happy that they did business with you then, because, you know, just hearing your journey so far, mindset wise, knowing that you're going to blow this thing out of the water. So, I'm excited to see what the next 10 years look like. But when you're competing with these Favors and these Ubers, that all of them have an app, you know, how are you trying to stay ahead of the competition when all these other things are starting to come out?
So we don't compete with like Uber Eats, Favor and stuff, because we don't deliver food. So what we do is we connect professional movers to consumers who need anything moved. So you can go on our platform and say, hey, I just bought 2 chairs at Costco and need it delivered. And we'll price that at a flat price accordingly. Or you can go onto our app or our website and say, I'm moving a 3-bedroom house. This is the square footage. And I want these 20 things moved, but these 10 things I want to go to storage. And we handle that. So that's what we do. So Uber, Favor, and all of those, they're really not our competitors because we don't deliver food. But we do have competition. I think that's a good thing. One thing that always I enforce onto my teammates or, you know, our employees is customer service. I think, you know, there's a lot of companies today that, you know, are big or whatever, and they forget about the customer, you know. I grew up, my parents always tell me, hey, you know, thank you, you're welcome. Work super, super hard. Go above and beyond. If somebody tells you they have 5 things to pick up and there's 10, you pick up those 10 and, you know, you do it and you do it with a smile. And I always tell my employees the same thing. Hey, if there's a mistake, even if, I think one thing that I love about our company is we're going to make mistakes. We've made mistakes in the past. We're going to damage stuff. It happens. But you can ask our customers. We will make it right. So if I deliver you a fridge and we make a damage and it's 100% our fault, I guarantee you we're going to send you money tonight for you to go get the fridge and we'll deliver it to you if you still trust us. So, yes, I always said we're going to make mistakes. And that's totally okay. But it's not the mistake that you made. It's how you make it right. Yeah. And I think that's really what separates us. We still think about the customer first.
Yeah, that's awesome. I love that. You know, with you being kind of an app-based business, there are a lot of people out there that always want to create an app, right? But not everyone's a coder. Not everyone can actually go through and create these apps. So did you create the app yourself? Did you outsource that? What was that whole app creation?
Yeah. So to all your listeners, I think this is a really important message, what I'm about to share, because I mentor some kids. And I actually started today, and they're in the same phase. They want to build apps and stuff for their business because they just feel like their business won't survive without an app. And that's the biggest mistake. And here's the reason why I say that. While we did the same thing, we were so convinced that an app is going to change everything for us. It's a great tool to have. In the beginning, what we should have done is created a website, had our phone number, and just, hey, tell me what you need moved, a couch. Okay, where am I picking it up? Where am I dropping it off? And then I would have had the customer's information. I would have a lead generating source and I could have still made revenue instead of let's wait until this app. And not only that, what people don't realize is even when you build an app, it's not like, hey, here, it's done. We today, even though we raise money and stuff, we're working on the app 24/7. There's always a glitch. Anytime you change something, it affects something else. So the biggest lesson is you don't really need an app to get your business out there. There's other ways you can start and then later implement the app. I am not a coder by any means. I don't even know how to write a line of code. What I did is when I had my idea, I pitched my idea at SMU, TCU, UNT at different campuses. And at UTA, I had a couple guys say, hey, I love what you're doing. Let's go talk. They wanted some equity, which I was totally fine with. And I got my first, you know, guy to develop the app. And we parted ways just because of mutual reasons. But he introduced me to our CTO who's with the company today. And that's kind of how I got to find a co-founder in that field.
I like that you brought up that you don't have to have an app as a business. You know, there, like you said, there's so many tools out there that if you create a website and there are CRM tools and now, you know, lead captures and building email lists. And there's so many different ways around generating leads that, you know, the app is all, is just kind of one of those cool things to have, right? But it's not necessary.
Yeah. And as we're seeing lately, it seems like, you know, people are just like, well, I have 7 million apps. Why should I download just another app? And, you know, and if you can, as you grow your business and stuff, if you see more customers willing to have your app, if you really see that much benefit of it, then I think that that's the right time to invest. But I mean, unless you have all the money and tools, or if your co-founder is, you know, somebody who can build apps and stuff, then I say maybe create something small, but I wouldn't spend really too much time of it. As sexy as we thought it was, you know, to track your driver and see what's arriving, that was a huge selling point. But even in the beginning, being able to call somebody and deliver something to you at an hour of such big size was a really differentiator for us. And we should have captured those customers that way instead of trying to perfect it.
Yeah. So how are you currently getting your drivers? What's that process look like? If, let's just say, there was a listener out there that wanted to maybe kind of get in business with you.
Yeah. So in the beginning, one thing we did was the whole Facebook, Nextdoor and stuff, we recruited that way, but that's not scalable. And there's a lot of scammers out there and stuff like that. So what we do now, which really works well for us, we partner with mid to high end moving companies. And they literally join our platform. We background check in. We, you know, make sure they have insurance and all that good stuff. We have our own insurance as well. And we put them on our platform. So if you said, hey, I'm moving my house tomorrow, on your platform, it would say you're going through Guzova, but your movers are, I don't know, GMB Moving or Powered by GMB Moving. Now, for the smaller guys who drive like a pickup or, you know, something among those size, they can just go through our website, apply to be a driver. We background check them and stuff like that. We have a couple questions that we ask him. That's an algorithm. It determines a score. And based on that score, we can see if we can put him in the system or not.
That's cool. Yeah. So it could literally anybody can go work for
anybody
you.
Anybody can go apply, but not many, honestly, that we pick. We really try to be the best company out there. And, you know, once we connect you to a company or a mover, we literally put everything on the line that you have the best experience. And, you know, and it, keep in mind, they don't pay, are the movers or the companies that partner with us, they don't pay us for anything. Like, we're not a lead gen. We don't say, hey, well, here's a, you pay us $100 to get this lead. And if you close it, good. If not, we don't care. No, with us, once somebody books a job on the app, they get paid 100%.
Yeah. So we know by now you're very present in the DFW area. Where else are you present with Guzova? Where are you looking at ahead of this year?
Sure. So we service all of Texas. We're in Colorado. There was our first market outside of Texas. So Colorado, we're in Nashville, and then we're in Florida and Tampa. And yeah, Florida, Tampa, and Orlando.
So it sounds like you're trying to move to that national landscape. Have you been able to work anywhere in the country?
Yeah. So for us, it doesn't take much to open up a market, right? I mean, we really have that figured out, but we're going to slow down just a little bit. There are some challenges, obviously, as you scale with, you know, employees having to raise funds and stuff like that. So we're just going to stay set kind of where we're at for now. A lot of our scaling has to deal with partnerships in those markets that we hit. Obviously, they're very strategic. We have some partnerships with certain companies there that generate revenue for us literally immediately. But so far, we're happy where we're at. Before we continue expansion, we definitely want to make sure we have a bigger imprint here in DFW.
So what's the ultimate goal? Is it to be across the country? Are you looking at maybe an international or a global solution there?
It's funny because the new investors we're talking to, a lot of them are London-based or have businesses in, you know, Switzerland and stuff. And they tell us, you know, that this would be a great business. And that would be, you know, something that's, of course, interesting. But then again, you know, my always motto to my employees always been like, well, you know, let's think global, but think local, but act global. You know, we think, you know, small in terms of, you know, like, hey, how can we do the best job? But we also think big. So far, the nationwide approach, you know, is definitely still appealing for us. I think we still have a lot to learn here locally. I mean, we do have a decent presence here, but I think it could be 10,000 times better. And keep in mind, Texas is a huge state, right? So yes, I mean, I would definitely be open to all of that. But right now, it's just nationwide. I mean, local first. When I mean local, it's Texas, really focus on that, and then slowly focus on these other
states. So when you look at your business overall, like, what was the biggest hurdle that you faced or something that you didn't realize that you were going to need to do becoming an entrepreneur?
Can you repeat that? I'm sorry. I'm just trying.
Yeah. What was the biggest hurdle that you faced when you were starting Gazova what is something that you faced or something that you didn't realize that was going to happen as you became an entrepreneur and as you started opening other locations?
I'm trying to think, honestly, and I want to make sure I give you a good answer for this. I think the hardest part, honestly, was the mental game. And I know it's not probably what you want to hear, but it's so hard to wake up every day and convince yourself, especially me with that time, I think, you know, I got married and stuff like that. So getting up every day, you know, and this was before funding and stuff, and even though there was more negative going towards us than there was positive, you know, from people just around us saying, hey, everybody in Texas has a truck. Nobody wants to download an app and stuff. And I'm very ignorant, but I like those people. I used to carry a notebook with all their names in the notebook. And I was like, once I make it, I want to make sure that these guys know I proved them wrong. But then in the end, I was like, who cares? You know, I'm doing this for myself, my family, and to hopefully other entrepreneurs that, you know, you can go out there and do it. So it was just myself waking up every day, convincing myself that I am doing the best possible thing and I'm not wasting my time. It was a challenge for me to convince myself, I guess.
Yeah. So what if there was a young entrepreneurship mind out there that was listening to this? What advice would you have for them if they want to get into entrepreneurship?
Yeah, I mean, it's not easy. I mean, I will say that. And I know we started the conversation with the glamorous cars and stuff. And I used to be that kid. I wanted that. And I sometimes still want it. But now looking back, it's like, I just want to be happy. You know, I have a successful business that, you know, operates that hopefully customers love. I don't care about that 5,000 square foot house. I don't care about the $200,000 car. I think those are nice, but I've been pushed to the limit, man. Like, I've literally had nothing. I mean, selling stuff out of my garage, you know, to make, you know, this thing happen and stuff. You just become humble. You appreciate the little things. So if you're somebody, which I meet a lot of guys out there, you know, they see the funding and they see, you know, the 100,000 square foot warehouse and all this kind of stuff. Those are all nice things, but that did not come overnight. And that's the thing that people forget. My biggest advice, go in there, but make sure it's something you love, you enjoy, you're really passionate about. And just remember, when things get hard, you have to really question yourself, you know, is this really why I started? Because it will get hard. It's not going to get any easier. It's just going to get harder.
Yeah, I love that. Where can people find you?
Me personally, I am on LinkedIn. Obviously, the company is as well. We're pretty active on Facebook, Twitter, not so much, but we're on there. So just the social media platforms, Instagram and all those others.
And I'll put, for the listeners, I'll put all the contact links and all of that information in the show notes of this podcast episode. But I've got two more questions and really one more question. The next part is really, when you look at the foundation of the people that were in your life, influenced your decisions, helped you through the whole process, I'd just like to give the guests the opportunity to thank those who have been a part of your journey with you. So this is your time to kind of thank them and shout them out.
Yeah. First off, my wife, honestly, if she wasn't here supporting me, I mean, she literally told me, do this until you know you can't anymore. I got everything. So that's the first person. I just had a newborn baby, so I know he won't be, but hopefully one day when I'm successful, he can look back and be, look at this, if he wants to jump off and take the plunge, you know, I want him to know. But my family, first and foremost as well, but some people out there, my whole crew member, my whole Gazova team, and then all our investors, really. And then some mentors that I, you know, met throughout my journey, you know, and there's just too many really to list. But if people are listening, they know who they are.
Yeah, very cool. I love that. Congratulations on the newborn.
Thank you, man. Thank you.
Not like entrepreneurship wasn't hard enough. You had to go have a baby.
That combination, that's a whole nother topic.
Yeah, we'll spend the next hour talking about that for sure. Right. All right, final question. And this is something I like to ask all my guests because it can be interpreted so many different ways. So how does Goran define success?
Business or personal?
Either or. You hear the word success and you want to say, is Goran successful? What does that mean?
To me personally, it's just being able to help others, I really love people, and it's just doing something you enjoy, you know. I was given so much in this world, escaping the, you know, war and stuff, and people always think that it was a negative, but it's like, I've been given so much. People took, you know, a chance. I mean, even coming to this country, we didn't need any help. It was just somebody gave us an opportunity to come here and put our best foot forward. So to me, success is just enjoying what you do, helping others, and you wake up every day, you know, happy with life. That's really success.
Yeah, that's awesome. I love that. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. Thank you for being here and telling your story. And I'm excited for you. I'm excited to see what the next 5, 10, 20, 30 years look like for you. And let's keep in touch. And again, I'm happy for you. Good job. Congratulations.
Thank you for having me, man. I really appreciate you.
Well, that wraps up this episode of the podcast, and thank you for tuning in this week. If you enjoyed this episode, make sure you subscribe so you get notified when a new episode releases every week. And if you are a visual person, feel free to check out the YouTube channel. Do you want to be a guest on the show? If you do, send me an email to empoweringbusinessdfw@gmail.com. And as always, thank you for listening, stay well, and God bless.